This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Well, hello and welcome to an all new episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods. And today is going to be a special episode because it's almost like a reverse episode. And what do I mean when I say that? Well, I get to sit down with Sheldon Primus, but this time around, it's not really me interviewing him. It's him interviewing me about my newest book, Safety in My Opinion. Well, at least that's what he thought it was at that particular point when he started to decide to do the interview with me, that he would be interviewing me about my newest book. But I had a little surprise during the conversation. So sit back, relax as I get to hang out with Sheldon Primus on the Safety Consultant podcast. But really, it's him overtaking Safety FM with Jay Allen. So I guess we should call this episode Safety FM with Sheldon Primus. So let's go ahead and get it started right now and let me know what you think. So how are we considering this? Are you taking over my show or am I taking over your show? Or are we kind of doing both? Because I always feel like it's kind of both regardless.
Yeah, I do it as well. So it's the duplicate takeover, if you will.
Well, it's definitely been a hot minute since we've done something like this. At least it feels that way. I know that we've seen each other a couple months ago in person, but yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely like to lay some trackage down when you're around.
That's right. Generally speaking, I know that we always seem to keep in touch, and especially when things happen, mm-hmm. you know, like, hey, I called you up and we talk, and that's a good thing. This, though, your book was completely just like ninja. You just did not tell me anything. All of a sudden, you're like, hey, follow this link.
Well, I mean, I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. By the way, we have to tell people about your shirt. I can't tell people. I mean, we have to describe this thing. This is,
it is.
Is a very great image of a lion, and it's multicolored. I mean, I need them to visualize this.
Multicolored.
Yeah, it's multicolored. Yeah. I mean, I think if I had 3D glasses on, it might do the trick. And I mean that in a good way. I like the shirt. It definitely pops. It pops. It definitely pops.
Yeah, I got that in Mexico. This is my Mexico
I was gonna ask you that. I was gonna ask you if that was the next thing.
Yeah.
No, it's a great shirt. I like goodness. It.
I love the culture with all that color.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry for sidetracking. But now, the book was something that I kind of kept on contemplating. I didn't know if I really wanted to do it. Todd had been trying to convince me for a few years now that I needed to do a book, and I kind of felt that a lot of the stuff that was out there, people were already talking about. I mean, I didn't really want to do a hot book, and I didn't want to do a book about here, take this and let me guide you step by step on how to do something. I kind of thought that there was a different aspect out there in regards to things that people are not talking about. And it's not that I came up with some crazy science thing. It was just, I was looking, and it's one of these things that I kept on saying, our systems kind of bend and fold and do these weird things that we allow them to do. There's a lot of conversations where the unwritten rule, if one may say it that way, where, okay, well, we know that Justin inside of this department knows everything, but we don't have that in a manual. We just know that everybody knows this inside of the system. And I was like, why do we have these weird rule sets that no one really discusses? And I was like, this could be an idea. And then plus all the other weird crap that I like to read, I figured, hey, we can put some of this together.
Well, not just the stuff you like to read, the stuff you like to ink, personal stories, hell on the way.
Well, I mean, and that was the other thing, too. In regards to putting it together, there was a lot of stuff that I was like, this is probably going to be like a super personal book. And I wasn't sure if some of it needed to be out there. It's one of those things like, do you really give a shit about my tattoos in regards on why I got them and the point behind it? But I was like, they're important to me. Not that I think that they're going to be important to anyone else, but there was a reason behind it, because I went from one day of a guy having tattoos and have had them for years. But then all of a sudden I went to a guy that had tattoos and they're all over the place, and now they can't be on scene.
Yeah. Well, every time I see you, I'm like, did he get another one?
Well, that's kind of how it's been, especially as of late. Now, I thought it was interesting. Recently, I was somewhere else, and a very popular safety professional approached me, and I was asked by her if I was trying to start a new religion. That was her question to me, and I was like, that's not really the thing I was going for, but now that you bring it up, it's still not really what I'm going for.
Yeah, well, I guess REM tried a long time ago.
Yeah, but they were losing their religion. I definitely wasn't trying to start anything. But I mean, I don't know. I keep on looking at a lot of the stuff, and I was like, for years, I read that My Big Toe book a long time ago. At this point,
Did you try to get me on that?
No. I mean, when I read it, I thought it was extremely interesting because it was like, wow, this guy's talking about stuff that logically, when you start thinking about it, I don't know if it makes a lot of sense, but when you start reading what he wrote, I was like, I can see what he's talking about. I can break this down in how some of these systems work. But I was like, how would this apply into what we do day in and day out? And the whole construct thing and all these movie references. And it's not like this stuff, the simulation theory stuff, is not being talked about pretty much by everyone now. But I was like, it really does apply to what we're doing. And I kept on looking at it and I go, would it make sense to put this in the realm of safety? And I think that there was a validity to it. And I was very, 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 very hesitant about doing anything. I mean, when I think I was set and done, I had 484,000 words written down when it was all said and done. That book is not that thick. It does have probably like 70 some odd thousand words in it. So that became one of those very strange things that I was like, not sure what I'm going to do. And then the whole thing behind safety, in my opinion, the whole purpose on why I did it in that fashion was because I didn't want anybody to tell me that my opinion was wrong, because it's my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So they can't. Yeah, that's your defensible part right there, because obviously it's your opinion.
Right. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I don't think that the whole thing's right. I don't think that the whole thing's wrong. But I think there's some stuff to think about.
There's a lot to think about. You've got so much there that, especially the way that you do with your analogy of the Matrix, and honestly, the systems that most of us will see at work, such as you have to follow this certain procedure for lockout, tagout, and when you actually see the workers, sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, usually when that's missed, it's on the group side, you know, when everybody's supposed to work on it and one person already has their lock. So the second person or the third person from the contractors, they decide, well, that's all right. It's already locked. I don't have to put my lock on there. And that's how the system shows its cracks, if you would. Right. And the way that you brought it out is, you know, when you start noticing this, you start seeing the frequency as being like if a radio signal into your regular station and you're hearing that fuzz there, the way you book described that frequency is it's pretty cool. And then on top of that, also talking about the construct of how safety systems are, that when you start seeing these little holes in the system, that's the glitch in the system. And now you're seeing that you're truly in a construct and you have a whole bunch of choices to make.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that that's what a lot of the thought process was behind it, because I kept on looking at it and I go, I don't know why we bow and bend to these things. If you kind of look at the bigger process, it's just one of those things that's how it's set up. And I thought, as well as going through this, that the stuff that I learned from Geller many, many, many moons ago, I didn't think that it was one of those things that it stopped applying. It wasn't like I looked at all these things that have been out there for years that I go, oh, there's no validity to it. I mean, I think that without Geller, I wouldn't have got to Hop. Without looking at some of the other stuff, like the lean stuff and things along those lines, which I don't really go into much detail about that, but looking at some of the other stuff that's there wouldn't have got me to the place where I'm at in regards of just information. And everybody wants to sit around and talk about hop versus BBS. And I don't really think that that's a valid conversation. I think it's one of those things that if the system that you have inside of where you work is working for you, do that, because you need to do that. And I look at hop as lenses. These are things that you add on to them. This is something that you can look at. It's not, this is what you need to replace BBS with. And I've spoken to so many people inside of the BBS world and so many people inside of the hop world where some BBS people actually believe that they are the creators of hop. And that's fine. I mean, you can be wherever you want, but I looked at it from the originators of where all the information came from. And I said, this is how I looked at it. This is how it applied to me. But there were certain people that got me from certain portions to where I'm at visually. And I wanted to add an extra tier. And it's not that I'm saying, hey, nope, you need to look at this and everything simulation theory now. Because when you start talking about simulation theory to people, they first imagine the Matrix. That's the first thing that comes to mind to most people. And they're Neo and they have a trench coat and there's some green code and all that. And I was like, that is not what I'm saying. I mean,
it's so cool.
Well, it is cool. I mean, yes, who doesn't want to be the one and all that stuff? But it's those things that you have to look at. You have to look at, okay, there are systems, there is no superpower per se that comes about. So I'm not saying that you're Neo in the Matrix and you're going to save all mankind or anything along those lines. It's just look at it. They're all systems, because even when we do our trainings, we're giving people an imaginary line. We're giving them this imagination on how things should work and they should be able to react in real time based off of a training that we provided to them. That's not real. It's not a real thing that they went through.
Yeah. And, it's so funny because when you do those trainings and the training speaks classroom talk and the workers get that little snicker and like literally I remember when I was training utility and I was telling them about snap cutters, using that for just a reduction of dust. So dust control, basically it's going to cut and score around the pipe and, you know, with some water on the score of the pipe. And those of you that can't see me, it's awesome because I'm literally got my hands going in circles.
and they're missing out on the shirt. We can't forget that they're missing out on the shirt,
they're missing
too.
Missing out on the shirt, too. So just imagine a nice, friendly watercolor lion looking at you. I'm talking about this equipment, and the guys are just giving me this puzzled look. And honestly, one of them just says, don't we have that in the warehouse? And a couple of them were like, yeah. They just truly didn't know what to do with it. No one took the initiative to take it out and start using it or anything. It was sitting there in the warehouse. And only until, you know, a new trainer comes in and starts training them about some hazards, do they start seeing that literally they're living in a construct in just disbelief of reality, basically.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's how trainings are. I mean, it's just not a realistic thing. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say the trainings are bad, because there's a lot of confusing things when it comes to some of this. I think training's great, but you have to understand that it's not reality, and you can't put somebody out there and say, train away and do it in real time and see how it goes, because there's the two things going on. Because how many times have you been in a training where they tell you, this is how we train people to do something, but this is how we do it? It's very common. It's a common practice, and it's not a safety thing. It's not an operations thing. It's across the board everywhere. Everybody has a version of this.
Yeah, that's great. And for everybody who's listening, and they really need to get how you got to, even how you got past the point of normal, traditional safety as a new person who first you weren't even in safety, but after seeing your incident with the 405, it got you thinking differently and then drove you into safety in a way. Can you explain some of that stuff for us?
I mean, realistically, I started in traditional operations. I enjoyed warehousing. Warehousing and logistics was probably one of my favorite things. For some reason, I loved inventory count. I don't know why I did that, but really enjoyed it. Thought it was super. Yeah, pretty much. And oh, if we could make like systems and have like little scanners and scan the product out, I just thought it was the greatest thing on the planet. But it was something that was extremely intriguing to me. And I did pretty well in it and kind of had some people that I knew at the time that were in that and really showed me how the business worked. And I was blessed enough to go through the whole process that I was able to make it pretty far inside of the organization that I was in. And I got to become a pretty much, we'll just call it a corporate guy, because that's really what it boiled down to. And I got to travel to go see all these different locations and be able to help out. And oddly enough, I had one of these guys that were going out on vacation. I was like, hey, can you help cover? Not a problem. I went up from Fort Lauderdale, right outskirts, really was Weston, was where I was based out of, and went from Fort Lauderdale up to Seattle. I was supposed to be there for 3 days. I had told everybody that, you know, wife at the time is pregnant, need to get back as soon as possible, blah, blah, blah. And legitimately left the location, got in the car, couldn't have been more than 10, 15 minutes. The assistant manager is calling me and said, hey, we have a pretty big incident that occurred. And I really thought he was full of it. I thought he was lying to me the moment that he called. And it ended up being a pretty terrible accident that ended up occurring. And at the time, we're hiring independent contractors, or we're contracting with independent contractors, really the proper term for it. And the independent contractors worked for this third party company, or contracted with this third party company. And that's how we would do everything. And unfortunately, this incident that occurred was pretty bad. I mean, we had a dump truck and a pickup truck, and then our delivery vehicle, and the pickup truck tried to cut in between the dump truck and my delivery vehicle. And the dump truck stopped short. The pickup truck wasn't able to stop in time. And then we hit the pickup truck. The dump truck noticed what occurred. They pulled forward. The pickup truck lit on fire. And and our vehicle was able to try to maneuver out, but it could not get out. So the driver, and they call it a driver and a helper, but in the book, I call it two drivers, just to kind of simplify it. Yeah. And they jump out. But the guy that's actually in the pickup truck is pinned. And he's honking because he can't get out and nobody's able to help him. The whole thing ends up lighting up, causes his vehicle, and he passes away inside of it. And also the vehicle that's the delivery truck catches on fire as well. Keep in mind, this is a fully logoed vehicle, and not that it's important, but of course to the company it's important. And the gentleman passes away. I mean, the gentleman is unable to get out. I ended up arriving to the scene. I didn't see any of this. All I'm seeing at this point is smoke by the time that I make it there. And by the time that I make it there, I'm standing on the side, and, you know, the police are kind of like, you know, you have to stay off to your side and so on. And I'm seeing it. And this is when I talk about it in the book, that the mother arrives. And when the mother arrives, I mean, you just found out your kid passed away. Of course, this is a huge deal. This is a life-changing moment. And then that's when she turns around and says it, where she turns around and she says, his girlfriend was 8 months pregnant and he was about to be a father. Changed everything. My perspective changed entirely from that particular point. You don't really know how to handle that scenario. And that was probably the first, I'll say that it's the first incident that I was in charge of that something like that occurred. I mean, I had been working for this retailer for quite some time where they had a head-on collision, but I wasn't in charge of the department. So I didn't really understand the nooks and crannies of it.
Yeah.
But when you're kind of involved and you're responsible for the things that are going on, It was interesting to see, because I didn't know how to handle it. And then when we started doing investigations, because everybody and their brother wanted to know what was going on, come to find out that the independent contracting team, they had put an unauthorized driver inside of the vehicle. So the person that was driving the vehicle wasn't even authorized to drive, which made it even 10 times worse, because this is when you start hearing the whole term, this was preventable, and, you know, where's your checks and balances and all this stuff. So there was all kinds of questions. I ended up being in Seattle at the time for about 19 days. And I'm just trying to figure it out, just trying to figure out what was going on, and going through all these corporate gatherings on what we are going to do. And there was, to tell you exactly how it was, there was a bigger concern of making sure that the labeling of the vehicle no longer had the brand on there, than anything else. It wasn't how is the person doing? It was the label. And are we able to get the appliances out if they're not damaged? And I was like, this is not what I really signed up for. I didn't have any concept of anything like that, you know, thinking about it. I mean, it was like, oh, did you guys walk around the truck? Yes. Cool. Check. You know, the people are, oh, yes, it looks like it's verified and life goes on. And that changed everything. I mean, that there's nothing that happened that did not change the way that I looked at work. And it wasn't that I knew at the time that I was going to get into safety, but that made me go down the path. I didn't know why I was doing it. I was trying to understand how can we make people safer. And I knew that the numbers were not as important. And I spoke to a lot of people back then, and they were like, you know, these are emotional events. They normally last about 6 weeks and all this stuff. And I was like, is this really how we should be thinking about this? And here I am 20 some odd years later. I don't think it was a 6 week event for me.
I guess in some ways you see how people will try to containerize different areas like that, you know, especially something as big like that. The mindset goes to protect corporate. And unfortunately, the empathy side is seen by the EH&S department, the people who are right there when the family showed up, like yourself. And then you see how the behemoth of the corporate takes over, mm-hmm. and the family gets lost.
Oh, I mean, it was amazing because I had risk management on the phone with me, and they were like, do not apologize. Don't say anything. Like, apology makes reference that we're taking responsibility. And I was like, what? I was like, these are the concerns at the moment. And I will tell you, I sat there in those meetings just amazed with people going, we need to make sure that the brand's okay. And when they first said that, I thought it was a joke for a moment, like one of those very bad taste jokes, but they were serious. And this was not a first time that this had occurred. It was just one of these things that it came about. And the whole thing was, this organization's pretty big, not very hard to figure out once you start looking at it. They had went from doing employee delivery to third-party delivery because they didn't want to take any responsibility for the things that were going on. So that's how they ended up doing it. And I mean, I understand the whole aspect of it, but it got very strange as things happened.
Yeah. So I guess a corporate decision to mitigate risk by doing a third party contract leads to a system that should have been created as to somebody needs to check on a third party contractor. Right. But they did not follow through with that part.
Well, I mean, it's a liability thing. And I'll tell you that when it comes to the whole aspect of lawsuits and all that, the company was sued. And I can tell you, as late as 7 years, maybe even 8 years past the event, we were still involved with trials. And I remember there was even there was emails that I had sent out during the time that were discoverable, of course, and people asking me questions. What did you mean when you wrote this line? I barely remember what I had for lunch yesterday. I'm supposed to know what I wrote something 7, 8 years ago on what was my intent behind an email. You capitalized customer service. What were you meaning when you said that? I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an interesting ride. I mean, and I never expected that this many years later, this is where I would be. I mean, I didn't think that this would be the case. I wouldn't look back and go, oh, this incident drove me to get here, but it definitely cracked something open that I never expected. And, you know, Jill James always says the accidental safety pro is what how she talks about to the people that she talks with. I mean, it definitely happened by accident.
Yeah. And the way that you see this now and the way that you penned it down in the book was you seeing the system now having some sort of flaw in the system. So if you're equating that to back to the Matrix analogy, then you know that there's something behind what's going on there. You're seeing the facade. Mm-hmm. You're seeing what you're supposed to see, the actual program. Yeah. And then all of a sudden there's a glitch in the program. And that's how you equated that situation to you.
Well, I didn't see it verbatim for that. I mean, don't get me wrong. The Matrix movie had already come out at that time, and it wasn't like, oh my God, this is what I'm stuck on. But I kept on looking at it as that we don't know what to do when something doesn't go according to plan. If there is a plan in place, things will be fine and people know how to react. If it goes out of the plan, it becomes very chaotic on how people react to things. And that is a version of a construct, regardless on how you look at it, because you don't know how to correct it. Think about all these accidents that occur, and then sometimes we have government agencies that look at them, and you'll just notice that the government agency will reference, this is what we're going to do to make things safer going forward. Not much really changes, but then there'll be another report that looks almost identical to the previous report that says the exact same information from the government agency. And I'm not picking on the government. It's just an easier example to get to when it's all said and done.
That's honestly the way that you show the system failures, if you would, especially from the period when you started transitioning to see human organization performance. You got real familiar and friendly with Dr. Tan. Mm-hmm. And taking you under his wing, helping you understand the principle of HOP, and you're already organizational guy. Do you just think it out loud as I was reading the book? I was like the way that you're giving, some of your personal stuff at the time, and then also some of the things that you're thinking about with the scientific part. The part basically when you started thinking mostly about the systems and having not stop blaming the people, mm-hmm. stop blaming the workers, but stop and listen to them when you're going through the facility and you just notice something's off today, and you just literally stopped and you started to feel the vibe and sense, all right, what's going on, gang? Tell me what's happening. And when you started doing more of that, you guys started getting more results. Talk us through that process and what it was like during that time period.
Well, I mean, it's kind of weird because as you hear me talk, I'm not a big feelings guy. I don't sit around and talk about this is how I feel about this and this is how I feel about that. And it's kind of common because when you kind of look at this, you might think that it's a feelings book when it's all said and done. But you always have your gut instincts about things. You can tell when something's off. If you've ever done audits, and I've done tons of audits, you can tell when people are nervous, when people are not ready, when they're putting something out on purpose for you to look at in regards of, hey, this is not going to work for a particular reason. That was the stuff that I kept on looking at. It was like, hey, okay, so you want me to put my attention to this dead obvious thing that's right here? That way I don't look at all the small stuff that's on the other side. And I just kept on going, they're doing this on purpose. There's a reason behind this. So I kept on looking and going, okay, something's off. What's the reason? You tell me what's going on. Because what happens most of the time is that when people look at safety or they look at somebody who's coming from corporate, they're the cop. They're the person that's there to do something wrong against how they have trained their system to work. And I said, let's be real. Let's kind of change it. Let's talk about what's wrong. And one of my favorite questions from learning from that was, what is the dumbest rule you have here? That's the question I like to ask the most now when I go somewhere. What's the dumbest rule?
That is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Because
I love that.
Because there's so many dumb rules that we have. And Bob Edwards and Andrea Baker, sometimes I have to clear that up because I've had said it in the past, Bob Edwards and Andrea, and then people are like, are they married? No, that's not what I mean when I say that. But just listening to them do learning teams and how they are drawing from people inside of the organizations and how they ask questions on where do you see the next problems going to be? that helped with some of those questions. Now, I didn't understand those questions at the time because that's not what I was doing. But when I started hearing them speak and them doing their thing, I was like, this makes a lot more sense. And that's how it really came about. It was just, why can't we just be fluid with the people that are there opposed to just being, this is what corporate wants us to do. And of course, that made me kind of a, we'll call it a corporate rebel to some extent, because people didn't like my style in regards from the corporate aspect, but people in the field really did, which I was like, I think the field people are the most important people, even though I know the people at the corporate office are signing my paycheck.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, when you get the staff to trust you, to engage with you, to tell you what's going on, what they feel like you could get things done, that's all you want. Right. That's all you want right there. And you described a lot about signal and receiving that kind of signal where you can feel when the workers are a little bit either with you or against you, or they also talked about a bunch with burnout too for the safety officer themselves.
Right.
The safety absorber, I wrote this one down as I was doing the audiobook. I was like, ooh, that's brilliant. Can you explain that one for us?
Well, no, I mean, here's the thing. When I've had a whole crew of safety professionals work for me. I've been blessed enough to land in a role along those lines. And what I always got frustrated with is that when somebody would walk in from the safety department, they were always looked at as the safety cop. Not understanding that that's not really why they're there. It's not the aha moment. It's not the gotcha moment. They are the person that's there to, let's say, reference the EHS department. But when you look at it, they're carrying a lot of stress because they have to be able to manage within operations to some extent, because, you know, there's a cost center associated to it. There's also this whole aspect of you're doing this work to help out to make sure that people are being quote unquote safer, but you're being visualized as a villain because you want them to be safer. So I looked at it as like, they're not a cop. They're the absorber from both ends here because they're getting it from the front, and it's going to sound terrible me saying this, but they're getting it from the rear at the same time too in regards on how this goes forward, because at no point are they getting information that's good. At least that's how I looked at it. And I was like, they're absorbing everything that's happening because of this particular reason. And they have to act tough to some extent, because if I tell you, I have a feeling that this is going on as I walk into your department, you're going to tell me I'm off my rocker in regards to that, because that's not a common thing that you use. And I talked a lot about signal. The reason behind that I spoke about signal is because I do radio. So radio is all signal based. So I was like, I can give this for people to have a better understanding on what I'm talking about, opposed to it just being one of these things where I just randomly just talk about stuff. So that's how that came about. And then I've had people ask me, what do you mean when I talk about signal? So if I had to give you kind of lettering and you were spelling it out, it'd be systems information generated through navigation, awareness, and liberation. That's how I would describe it. If I had to give you letters for everything, that's how I would do the description. But I wouldn't get too hung up on that, because the signal should be whatever you want it to be, because there's signs in everything, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And another part that just truly got me was your reference to a lot of the different pop culture things that was almost like third wall breaking through the cracks, such as the Truman Show.
Right.
And how those things kind of like meant to you, you know, the Matrix, the Truman Show, was theater, I guess, the opening, I guess, of your mind through the Truman Show. How did that come about?
Well, no, I mean,
an interesting story.
I mean, the Truman Show, just think about it. The basis of the movie is that the gentleman that Jim Carrey plays inside of it lives in this perfect system, and he never knows that the system is not perfect And that's essentially what we want to we want to develop in corporate America. We want to have this belief system where we're doing black line, where somebody's describing on how everything should work and it should be perfect. And they never get to see the blue line, which is exactly how work is performed. And that's pretty much when I saw that movie, not really understanding those concepts yet. It's like, how can someone be in a perfect system and not realize that there's some things that are going on? And sometimes we forget to look around. We forget to see what else is going on there. And I'm going to tell you, when I was writing some of this stuff down, I was like, there will be people that are out there that are going to say, this sounds like some kooky shit that you're talking about here. And that's not what it is. It's information of just look around. If you pay attention to the world around you, there's a lot more going on than what you think. And this can be anything. And I'm talking about anything when it comes to, you could be walking down the road and there could be a drug deal going on in the corner and you'd have no clue. There could be a robbery going on in the parking lot. And I'm not trying to give you all bad things, but there's stuff that's happening while people think nothing's happening. There was a book that I read many years ago that was called QBQ, The Question Behind the Question. And it really related to what is the intent of people's questions when they ask a question, and what is the question behind the question they're really trying to ask? And that kind of drove me into think about, hey, okay, hold on. There's some more stuff here than opposed to it just being what people are laying forward in front of you. Think about it. If there's something wrong going on inside of your household, when you get to work, you normally don't talk about that. There's something else that's going on. So there's always things that are happening that we just don't see. And that Truman Show movie in particular, when I watched it the first couple of times, because I remember watching it relatively quick the second time, I looked at it and go, how would you not be able to see the flaws as you're going through it? And then the moment that he saw the flaw, what else was there? And I mean, think about it. They put a condition inside of there that he made him afraid of water. And he wanted nothing to do with water because for him to escape his worst terror, he had to go through water.
I really need to rewatch that because honestly, that's such groundbreaker, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's another movie that's kind of underrated in comparison to it. That's called Vanilla Sky, and it's based off of a foreign film called Abre los Ojos. And that was the original one. And then Vanilla Sky came out. I call it a cult classic because it was really what it boils down to. But there's a lot of similarities in that movie to The Truman Show in regards of some of the fear tactics and along those lines. But if you look at it, there's some things that are kind of intertwined with each other. Now, listen, I don't want anybody to sit here and go, I'm not telling you that we're sitting inside of some giant computer system and this hanging out and, you know, we're playing the Sims game. But I'm telling you, there's some more things that are going on if you pay attention. And that's really what I want for it to be the focus, opposed to it being, hey, listen, there's some things that are there that can really work for you behavior-based safety-wise. There's some hop stuff that can really work for you. But look at the bigger scope, because regardless of you using these different lenses and these things that are working, there's some other stuff that's happening too, because we don't have perfect systems. And what happens most of the time is that the system starts mimicking the things that we're doing. It catches a language and wants to make that language perfect as we're going forward. It's, oh, okay, now that you're seeing this, I don't really want you to see this, so let me give you a little bit more. But I might be getting ahead of myself as I tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that you're going to work on it. This is the first of a trilogy, too, so that's awesome, because that seem to have come out of the blue where all of a sudden it's not one, but three.
Well, now that you mention it, I got it in my hot little hand right there. There is the second safety one. It's called Safety Mutation Information Misdirection. And it's coming out on the 13th of May, which will be here in just a few days is when it will come out. And if you give me a moment, I'll even do something for you that I haven't even released on my show yet. So here we go.
In safety, in my opinion, you woke up. You saw the system, the simulation, the structure that trained you to mistake compliance for care. Safety mutation. Information misdirection picks up where the signal fractured. Because the system didn't shut you down, it rebranded you. It packaged your voice, sold your rebellion as a new initiative, and smiled while doing it. This isn't a manual. It's a decoded transmission about what happens when slogans replace stories, when safety becomes marketing, and when truth gets mirrored so perfectly, you forget it was ever yours. You'll see the mutation. Learning teams turned into theater. Zero harm turned into optics. And feedback turned into formatting. But the signal didn't die. It was redirected.
Safety Mutation is book two of the Signal Transmission Trilogy. Available now in print, Kindle, and audiobook. Narrated by the author, Jay Allen, PhD, because the system adapted. Now it's your move.
So there you go.
Yes, that is awesome. You heard it here first.
Yep, heard it there.
Alan Fid.
Yep, heard it there first. So on the 13th of May, that one will come out. I have just finished the audio recording for the third book, and that one will come out on June the 13th, which is a Friday. And purposely did it on Friday the 13th.
Man, you ain't playing. You got these things out.
No, I mean, so they're all done. And listen, for some reason, I put the pen down, and it was about a week, and I said, there's more. It's not just this. There's more to it. And I'm going to tell you, I had no intention of writing one book, and I sure did not have intention of writing three books. But once I started, I couldn't shut up. And I was like, there's more that people need to see. Now, listen, the first book's the big one. I'm not going to lie. I think it's 352 pages if I have it down to a science. But I spaced it terribly on purpose because I wanted it to read. I wanted it to read how I speak. I wanted it to be the stops, the way intentionally on how I do it. Now, my editor, me and the version went back and forth quite a bit in regards of how I wanted that to look. Now, book two is much smaller and book three is much smaller as well. Those two will be about 180 pages a piece. And that's it. I mean, but and after this, the way that I'm looking at it, I don't have anything else to say. I mean, there's nothing else to say about this. It's the thing that I wanted to share.
I'm looking forward to hearing all of the signal. I'm receiving all of the signal that's coming through whatever you got going on through that brain of yours coming to us.
Well, I mean, I don't say that it's right. I'm not saying that it's wrong. I'm just saying that it's stuff that if we pay attention to, you'll notice that there's more there than one thinks. And that's it. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty impressed. This is the first time I think we've sat in an interview that I didn't try to take it over. I tried to really shut up this time and let you do your thing.
I noticed that too. So that's why I'm like, I'm not messing it up. I'm doing the pitching here. So I'll let you go ahead and do your swings. Your book is so amazing because you have so many different references. I know you tell the story with Melissa and her incident, and I cried again because first was in your intro when you were doing your family introductions. I'm like, this isn't going to be one of these books. And then, you know, with you describing that time period in your life, is this the first time you really like publicly spoke about it?
Well, I've spoke about it in some presentations in the past, and it's not normally something that I normally will go to in a presentation, but I wanted people to realize that just because you have some kind of lettering behind your name or just because you've been in this industry for X amount of time does not necessarily mean that things are going to be perfect. So the Melissa accident, and Melissa's my wife, for those people that do not know, she ended up falling, and she fell from what we're guesstimating anywhere between 14 to 19 feet, just depending on who's measuring and how everything looked. And she ended up having a traumatic brain injury. And based off of that, I mean, I was a safety professional. This should have never happened because I have letters behind my name and I've been doing this for so long. And that was not the case. And it came, I mean, 15, 16 years down the road where I would have never thought something like that could happen, especially not at where I lived. I mean, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen. You know, you're going to kind of know these things are you should be, you know, there should be some predictive software that's going to tell me that this is going to happen. I mean, isn't that what we make these assumptions on? So, and it happened at my house. Yeah. And what was I going to do? I mean, I had no idea to do of what to do at that particular point. I mean, I knew my traditional CPR and first aid and, you know, the traditional stuff to do. But what do you do when it impacts your life? What do you do when someone's there in a coma and they can't do anything and they can't talk to you? I mean, there's no guide to tell you what to do during that time.
Yeah, so you did the right thing, reading to her, being there, you know, just all the stuff and not knowing what and when you're going to get her back.
I mean, what drove me crazy about the whole thing was the question, and I write about it in the book, where people ask me, am I going to stay? Like, I never thought about at any point that I should leave. I mean, I didn't know that that was an option of, hey, I should leave. I mean, the thought never even crossed my head. And I mean, and keep in mind, I'm not married at the time. We're not engaged. She had been through a divorce. I had been through a divorce and we were dating and weren't sure, you know, where this was going to go. And all of a sudden this thing happened. And I mean, I jokingly say this now that she's okay. You know, she had to get a traumatic brain injury before she would decide to be with me long term. But I mean, that's a whole other story to talk about. But I knew that the chapter was impactful the moment that I saw that she read it and she cried. And that's not something that I would normally see from her. So I was like, oh, hopefully I penned something right. Didn't do anything wrong there.
Yes. everything right. One of those moments I was like, man, he got me again.
Well, I mean, and that's not my, it wasn't my intent to do a memoir but there are some stories that are really close to my journey through this. And I mean, and there's tons of stories that I could share, but there were just some that I thought they were more personal and it wasn't like, hey, let me expose everything to you. But the 405 changed the way that I looked at safety. I mean, because I really didn't care about safety at the time. And then when the Melissa incident occurred, where she had the traumatic brain injury, it was like, how could this happen? I'm supposed to be a trained professional in this industry. So how could this occur and us not know? And I mean, it wasn't like, oh my God, we didn't have rails and all the, you know, all the fun stuff that people think about all the time. And it's not like we didn't do the 3-point stand as you're walking and all. I mean, all that stuff that people talk about, it was just normal pattern stuff. And just out of the blue, it occurred.
Wow. I bet you nowadays, the way that they do social media, that they'll still find fault at someone like that, you know, in an instance like that. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous and just lost any hope, empathy. It's just, wow.
I mean, it's easier to say human error than anything else. I mean, it's, oh, this could have been resolved if the human wouldn't have done X. I mean, it's always the interesting part about it. And listen, don't get me wrong. I'm never going to sit back and say I didn't think that way in the past, because of course I did. I also at one point remember telling people, you would hear the slogan of all accidents are preventable. And I was like, of course they're preventable. So who knows?
What do you think now? Do you think all accidents are preventable? What's your philosophy on that now?
Well, I hang out with a guy that says, yes, that all accidents are preventable. And so are all lottery tickets are knowable after they're drawn. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So after something happens, of course, it's preventable. But because we don't actually put it in realistic form, it's not a realistic approach on how we approach most of the things, because we think that there's this journey timeline on how exactly things occur. It happened this. Nope. That's somebody who has put the scene together and that's how they're visualizing that it occurred. I don't know what's going on in your mind. I don't know what incidents happened prior to you getting to X portion in your life where an incident or accident occurred. There's too many things to factor in. I mean, we might have some event learning that we did, or we might have some timeline that we're guesstimating, but we don't know if that's exactly how everything occurred.
And yes,
I mean, it's just a different aspect.
Think about the variables.
Mm-hmm. Nobody ever wants to think about that, because if we talk about variables, that means that our system did not work perfectly. And that's the thing. Everything that we do is some level of a system. Even the way you live at your house, there is a level of a system. You wake up during the day, but for the most part, most people do. You eat at a certain time. You normally eat 3 meals a day. You go to bed when it's dark. You do X, Y, and Z. You plan and take a shower, because that's the system that we've been taught to do. Everything's a system. You have a family how alignment on how things work. If you have a daughter, the daughter normally goes to the mom, not so much to the dad. If you have a son, they normally go to the father, not so much the mother. Just kind of how these things are structured. Not that I'm saying that it's wrong, not saying that it can't be reversed, but this is normally the commonality on how things occur. Another system.
And another way of saying structured is construct.
Well, I mean, think about it real quick. If there's something that you do daily that most of us do daily, that we have this social agreement that we do with everyone, and it's driving. Think about it. We have agreed based on a structure that we have that if you pull up to a red light, you will stop. That if you pull up to a stop sign, you will stop. I will slow down normally if there is a yellow light or speed up. If the light turns green, I will move and no one else will move because this is a social agreement that we made, even though there's some laws that go into it, but it's an agreement that we've made. There's no line there. There's
unless no, you're in Miami. And
but you understand.
They don't have that agreement.
Oh, I know. I mean, I go to Mexico quite often. There's parts of Mexico that I don't think that they understand that. But that's the stuff that we make this social agreement about, because there's nothing stopping you. But this is a part of a system that we've designed.
Do you see, like, if for me, I live in the world of compliance, right? So I deal with a lot of OSHA compliance and at times EPA compliance. And actually, for some people, they don't know that I started with EPA stuff before I even got to the OSHA stuff. My world of compliance, I'm really dealing with a lot of absolutes, right? And I know that at 4 feet in general industry, fall protection starts. And at 6 feet in construction, fall protection starts. So if I'm going to be a company in construction that wants to be better than the OSHA rules, then I'm going to have them start at 4 feet, right? And the theory or the thought behind it is that now I am being more stringent than the regulator, but is my worker actually safer from this action? Is that like part of the system that's, you know, trying to do the looking good index to the regulator, and or is it an actual action that you think the worker now 2 feet lower is going to be safer? They're going to feel safer, and then all of a sudden the work is going to get done more efficiently.
Well,
is that the type of conversation you guys have in there?
Well, let's kind of flip it a little bit. Let's think about a couple of different things. When you buy a new computer, do you buy an antivirus software program for it? Most people do. Some people don't.
Yeah.
That is a choice. The manufacturer that made the computer told you the computer is going to work. You opted to buy antivirus software to see that you don't get a virus. Same people that take vitamins. That is a choice because you want to see if you can change your immune system. So we can have the argument either way. I mean, we can talk about it either way. I can say, no, you don't want to be more stringent than the rule. Have you not seen how the federal government is changing everything? Why would you want to change this stuff? That's one thing. Or you can say, no, I want to do better than the bare minimum and have my people more protected. Is it bureaucracy or is it the right way to do it? It's an opinion question. And that's where it gets very interesting, because today I can tell you one thing. But tomorrow I can have a totally different opinion about the whole thing. To me, I have always looked at it when I would run systems that I wanted to be better than the minimum. But that was my choice. And I was allowed to have that choice at the time.
Yeah. And actually, the data says that the slips, trips, and falls, same falls to the same level, is actually at a lower rate than some of the heights of falls, even this is 6 feet and 4 feet. So it's an interesting concept altogether. But honestly, for us in the U.S. versus people who are all over, like you said yourself, you see them in Mexico and in other places that you go, that they may not have any safety. So, you know, safety, the right. PPE, or they have the electrical system that you're looking and wires are everywhere and someone's on top of the pole straddling those wires. But yet somehow in their mind, they're doing some sort of risk assessment, risk analysis. They're there's something that they know not to do, not to touch. And though to us, it looks like, whoa, what are they doing? But to them on an individual basis, they've done some sort of risk analysis. And even though they may not have the fancy tools in PPE, they're still participating in what we call safety.
Right.
Is that a fair statement to say?
Oh, I would definitely say it's a fair statement to say. I remember not so long ago, I went to Thailand and I was in Thailand and I remember walking down the street and there was a couple of things that stuck out to me right away. I remember that I was seeing this electrical pole or this pole that had electricity and they had so many wires hanging from it that I was in shock that there was not what I would deem a standard for it, but it was within their requirements there that it was okay that people could still walk around it. And I thought it was wild in regards of seeing that. I also remember when I was walking around people on scooters and I saw one person that had three people on the scooter. And I was like, that's crazy. That's just not safe at all in regards to doing it. And I'm hanging out with Todd Conklin at the time and we're walking and he goes, oh, that's nothing. Give it a few minutes. I think when it was all said and done, I was up to eight people on one scooter riding. And I was like, oh my God, I would have never imagined to see this. Then the other thing that was kind of interesting, and I've seen this one on a video, I did not see it on purpose. It's people that are putting some bamboo, some construction using bamboos together in Thailand as well. And they have no fall protection. They're pretty high up in the air, but they're walking across on the bamboo at the very top. And I mean, they're just using their feet to balance is just exactly how they're doing it. And they're carrying products around to try to move it here and there. And I don't get it.
I have seen some kung fu movies that I've like, whoa, I got to do that.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend it, but yeah, of course. But then, dealing with a fall inside of my household, I mean, I can understand why I don't want to look at it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, goodness, I can definitely visualize it when I was younger, watching all those movies and Five Deadly Venoms and all the other ones. In your brilliance, also mentioning the Mirror of Four in your book.
The Archetypes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So can you explain more about your Mirror of Four?
No, when I was starting to talk about that, I always think that there's things that are going on inside of your mind. I mean, regardless of what you have going on, and they could be good, they could be bad, they could be different. And there are different aspects inside of your life of people. They could be people, they could be places, they could be things. And when I started talking about the Mirror of Four was that there's these four things that pop into my head all the time there. And I refer to them as her. So automatically, of course, you know that when people were reaching out to me, they were like, what's going on? Is there somebody else in your life? No, that's not the case. But I looked at it and they've all had a level of impact in my life, not because they were a person, but they helped me frame things differently. Now, listen, for as good as a good guy that I am, there's some bad thoughts that I have. And for as bad as a bad guy that I am, I have some good thoughts as well. And I think that we all have that. It just all depends on, we'll say, quote unquote, the character that we're portraying to the people that are around us. And I've heard Todd use this about 1,000 times, and I'll say it here. Do you act differently in church than what you do in a biker bar? And if you think about the archetypes, it's kind of similar to that. They kind of make you think. They kind of make you reflect. I mean, depending on what your archetype is, they make you think of things differently. Like there's thoughts that sometimes, how would it be if I just got up and ran away from everything? Everything that's tying me down, how would life work? Now, I'm a big music person. And when I say that, I'm talking about pressing play like on an MP3 player, not so much of me playing music, but it's one of those things that music talks to me, and it's the music and it's the lyrics and it's so on. And one of the archetypes that I look at, one of the mirrors, as I put it in the book, is music. And music has had a huge impact on me my whole life. And I remember when I was much younger, I would go hang out with my aunt and uncle at times. And Saturday morning, don't be surprised if music was blasting and that's how you woke up. And that was a reflection of what was going on at the time. And that became an impact of the archetypes that I speak of. And I mean, there's been some of fiction and so on. And it's not like they talk to me. I don't want it to come across like, oh my God, this is the version of this person that talks to me. But it's a lens. Like there are people that I can talk to and they won't say a word. And they're an archetype in my life in regards of they're just reflecting back what I'm saying. And there's a person that I know extremely well that talks about the theories that I talk about. And when I bring these theories to her, she doesn't say anything, good, bad, or indifferent. She just listens. And we'll say stuff like, seems like a lot for you to carry. And that's it. And come up with your own thought. I'm not going to guide you one way or the other.
Yeah. Wow. That is kind of very Buddhist. You know, who am I to say, you know, if it's good or bad?
Well, I mean, you know? That's where we do a terrible job sometimes is we're terrible at listening. And I include everybody when I say that. Sometimes the best moments you can give someone is not to give them an answer. It's just to be there for them to think through it. That's it. That's all they need. They want someone to talk to. I mean, I don't go much in this particular book, but the people that do the work in the field, especially in the safety department, sometimes struggle the most with their perception on how they're liked, on their perception on how things go. And I go a little bit deeper, not in this book, but in another one, where we turn to some things that are probably not the best for us. And that's because we are looking for a level of acceptance. We're looking for the moment of silence, if one can put it that way, in regards to what's going on. And it's a hard thing to talk about because people don't want to talk about this. People don't want to talk about mental health unless it's a planned month or a planned week that's supposed to happen according to a calendar. But this is a conversation that should be had all the time.
Wow, and you do. You've even got a personal connection for your tats too. Yeah.
I mean, the way that I look at it is that I don't want people to look at my tattoos for the sake of just looking at tattoos. I have a heart with a semicolon on the side of my head, and I purposely put it there because I want people to know that there is a time and there is a moment to pause. There's a time and moment to pause and, you know, consider everything that's around you because some people struggle mentally. And I mean, I'm not saying I live a perfect life because by no means do I even come close to that. But there's times of doubt that come about. And, you know, I will tell you that people might criticize the work that I do and that's fine. But I think that I'm my biggest critic. I mean, I think that I complain the most about the stuff that I do. And I think that that really occurs to everyone that's out there. In one way, shape, or form. And then the other tattoo that I reference in the book that we're talking about is the question mark tattoo, because I want people to question everything. That's why I put it on my ring finger, because I always notice that if you ever go somewhere, so people are always looking at your ring finger. I always think it's kind of funny that that's how it works. So I was like, I'll put a question mark right there. And at first, Melissa did not care about, I was like, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to wear it without my ring and blah, blah. And she was fine with it. She didn't care. I mean, it's the ring means something from a religious standpoint, from a vow standpoint, not that anything would change, but it was the whole point of, I want people to ask questions, but I determined that I wanted to put my ring back over it, but I wanted people to look at it and go, question. I want you to question everything. And when the people ask me, why do you have a question mark on there? Question everything that's around you. Not that I thought I was the Riddler from Batman, but that's what it's resembled from, especially the 2022 one. Because I thought that if I put the Jim Carrey one there, it might be too, you know, that might be a little bit too questioning.
That's right. I was like, yeah, okay. Jim Carrey one. all the characters are a little bit cartoony there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hey. Val was in that one too, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. So, Sheldon, here's what I would like to do if you're cool with it. I don't know when you're releasing this episode, so we can talk about it offline. But what I would like to do if you're cool with this, if the people that are listening to your show go to safety IMO, which stands for InMyOpinion.com, and they go to the one that says AudioWise, which is the audiobook of this, and they enter the code SC. What would SC stand for? For Safety Consultant. So SC, not for Sports Center, just in case. They'll get the book for free. Yeah. They'll get the book for free for 2 weeks from the release of the date of this particular episode. So Safety In My Opinion or safetyimo.com. Go to the one that says AudioWise or SoundWise. I should probably say it correctly. SoundWise, and they'll get the audio book for free.
Yes, yes. And that's how I consumed this. It was through the audiobook with SoundWise. So it was awesome. And honestly, it's like, especially podcast listeners, you know, you go through a pretty quick, and I even saved it for when I was traveling. I love listening to stuff when I'm traveling, you know, so I can just listen, and I just, you know, have to be headphones in and be alone.
Well, I mean, what I want to do is, believe me, I'm never been one of these people. Oh, I need to sell this. I need to sell that. I want to give it away. I want to be able to take a listen to what's going on. It's on Audible, but Audible, I can't give you a free code. I apologize about that, but they're very restrictive. Like if I signed up directly with Audible, they wanted like a 7-year licensing agreement. That's like way behind baseball, this type of stuff. And I was like, no, I want to give this thing away. So that was my option of doing it in that format. And also the version of audio, I've incorporated some additional stuff inside of there that's not in the written format. And I did that on purpose because I always think that, you know, audio is normally how I communicate with most people in regards to what we do radio show wise and the podcast and so on. So I figured that would be the one that I wanted people to pay attention to. I've incorporated some pictures of like Thomas Campbell, some stuff from when I had the opportunity of meeting Michelle Joy from Cannons, when I got to meet Glenn Danzig. I list the songs where people can scan the QR code for they can take a listen to it. And there's a bonus chapter. There's a whole bonus chapter of stories that I did not put into the book.
The pictures were so awesome. I was like, look at that. And
I'm much younger in some of them, too, I might add. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Another thing that you mentioned in the book was a copy of a copy. Mm-hmm. That one kind of struck me because I honestly caught myself in my training doing that quite a bit until I got challenged once by a student on some concept that I was just regurgitating without not knowing it. And I literally was like, you're right. and from there, I told her and in front of the class, I was like, this is completely brave. She spoke up. I'm supposed to be the professional. She knew what she knew and she shared that with the class. That was awesome. And, that's how I, presented it to the class. And honestly, the copy of the copy thing, it seems like we've got some real funny phrases now. The R&D department, rip off and duplicate. Mm-hmm. a lot of people are doing that with a whole bunch of stuff. So tell us about your revelation with that copy of a copy. It's kind of powerful.
Well, I mean, it's an old Nine Inch Nails song. I want to start off on where it came from. And I remember listening to that song and just going there. He talks about a portion in there that copy of a copy, everything that has been said or everything that you're going to say has been said before. That's kind of one of the main lyrics inside of there. And I looked at it and I go, to get to certain portions in our life, we imitate what we've seen others do. And that could be good, that could be bad. But when we start just doing that all the time, that's where the problem comes about. Now, I've copied Scott Geller. I've copied Todd Conklin. I've even copied some of the stuff that you were doing. I mean, let's be realistic. When we first interacted and I seen your safety consulting course, I could not stop watching the stuff that you had sent, which you were very generous about, by the way. No, I'm being serious. And I told you, I had paid big bucks for a consulting course right around the same time, too. And yours was 10 times better than anything that I had seen. But I was looking at it and I kept on going, we imitate other people to try to get to where they're at, not coming to the realization that we need to use our own voice. It's not bad to copy people. I mean, I'm not saying that that's the case, but when you're depending on trying to do mimicry of someone else, identifying almost as the other person, you're not doing yourself any favors. Now, don't get me wrong. When I had the opportunity the first time to go around with Todd, who doesn't want to be like Todd? Oh my God, he can make a room transform. He's able to communicate with people where it sounds almost like he's talking directly to you. Why would you not want to learn that? But they didn't want Todd imitation. They wanted Todd. And I have a different flavor than what Todd has. But it took me a hot minute to realize that. And I remember sitting down and making presentation decks where they were very close to what Todd was doing. And then I came to the realization, that's not what people want. So are you going to be okay being your own voice? Now, listen, if you come to a presentation of mine, it's not going to be perfect. I hope it's not. And it's not going to be polished. We're going to talk. And we're going to talk about some uncomfortable things. And I'm going to probably give you aspects of stuff that you're not going to want to hear. Maybe some that you do want to hear. But I had to find my own voice. But realizing, to get to my own voice, I had to copy other people.
Copying other people is okay, gang, at first, because what you're doing is you're modeling. So you're modeling, you're trying to figure out what you like. And after a while, you're going to notice that it's like wearing a suit that doesn't quite fit. And you're going to feel like, you know, this just isn't me. And that's your sign to say, all right, I've evolved from this point. I have a better understanding myself. And now you can move on and get your voice out there. You know, so that's part of your reprogramming from where you were to where you need to be. So
I mean, I want to make sure that we understand that you're on point here. I mean, I don't think you're wrong. We have to start somewhere. But just don't let that be your crutch. Don't start, you know, there's concepts that are out there, but give credit to where you found them. I think that that's so important because I think that there's a lot of people that forget that. But give credit to where you found them. And hey, you need to do these things to get to a certain point. But you need to develop your own voice as you're doing it too. I mean, it's easy to mimic what you've seen. Like, who doesn't want to be a Monday morning quarterback in regards, oh, if I was doing it, it would be so much better. I would have thrown the ball like this. We don't know that's going to happen in that fashion. So, yeah, I mean, copy for the time that you need to until you get your voice.
They just love doing that. That's like their thing, you know, because Hank, if that were me,
exactly.
You hear that quite a bit. Hey, I do not want to miss this opportunity to ask you, since you brought it up in the book about the birth of Safety FM, when you first started to branch out and have a concept of doing safety and reaching your workers a little differently, and you got some shade thrown at you.
Well,
and then you turned that into Safety FM.
Well, the interesting part is that Safety FM has always been known, or at least when I first started it with Melissa, it was known as Safety Focus Moment. That's what it stood for. But nobody really wants to type that out. That's too long to type. And we essentially shortened it up to Safety FM, which a lot of people think it's frequency modulation, which is really not the truth. It's for Focus Moment. And originally, this started off as a podcast inside of an organization that I was working at the time. And the VP at the time thought that it was stupid. I mean, there was no other way to do it. Nobody wants to hear a podcast about what's going on inside of an organization. Now, the interesting part was I had already recorded three at the time that he told me this. We had released two internally, and he told me that it was a pretty much dumb idea that we needed to stop doing it. And at that time, I had already interviewed the CEO of the company, which I was like, hey, that should give me some street cred. And then I had, there was some product development manager that I had actually interviewed at the same time. We had released those two internally. Now, the third one was pretty interesting because the guy that I had interviewed worked inside of the company, but he was also an Army Ranger. But when he did his conversation, he mostly talked about the Army Ranger stuff and not so much what was going on inside of the organization and how some of the stuff that he could learn in the Army should apply to what you can do inside of safety. And I was like, that's kind of cool. but that one never got released internally. So that was the episode. That episode I took, and I was like, I want to test this. Because this guy's telling me I don't have anything. This VP is telling me I don't got anything here. And I was like, I think I have something. And so I took it, and I released it to the world. There was no branding. I mean, there was like no company name and so on. And it was out. And it, within a very, very short period of time, less than a week, and I think it had to do with the tagging because it was talking about Army and Rangers and so on, we had about 30,000 listens. That episode, number
what,
one.
What? 30,000
yes.
in about a week?
Yep. 30,000. That's not 3,000, 30,000. Not a typo in the book.
Wow.
So 30,000 listens, and then I freaked out because I had the guy's name inside of the episode. He said the name of the company, but not laying into anything else of the company. So then I was like, oh, crap. Am I going to get in trouble? So I pulled it down. Now, here's the fun part. If you go back to the very beginning of the Safety FM listings, you will realize that the first three episodes are not there. That's part of the reason on why they're not there. It starts off at episode 4. So once we figure that out,
some sort of Safety FM trivia game right there.
So once I figured that out, I was like, we have something. I didn't know what we had, but I knew we had something. And then I started releasing the episodes. I was like, let's try this out on a weekly basis and see how it goes before we started doing two episodes. But I had listened to that at that particular point in life. I had already listened to Dave Ramsey, and Dave Ramsey was doing where he was doing talking about money. And then he was doing that he has his own consultants that should do stuff. And I was like, from a company standpoint, I think that makes sense, because if I have a whole bunch of consultants that are on here, and we build this out and have them go out there and, you know, they do their thing. I don't want anything. I just want to share their message. I was like, I think we have something we can build. And I remember we went back and forth with the safety focus moment thing, because I was like, I don't want to lose the name. I just don't know what to call it. And me and Melissa went back and forth, and it was like, I think it's Safety FM. Like, that's it. I was like, didn't make any sense, but it was like, it just worked.
Yeah, it's actually like whenever you're a kid, you can't nickname yourself. It just has to happen.
Right.
And something happens, your buddies all of a sudden starts calling you that, and you're like, man, why are you calling me that? And then all of a sudden people from other schools start calling you that, and then that's what you are. That's your nickname. That's kind of like you guys with the Safety FM story there. It wasn't right until it was right.
Right. And then now it's kind of funny, because that's the brand. I mean, that's really what it is. We don't go by Safety Focus Moment and pretty much anything unless I'm billing you for something. But outside of that, it's Safety FM.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, tell me about this quote. Never go past a word you don't understand.
Well, you know that one's a controversial one, because that's something that I learned when I was studying, when I was doing my doctorate degree. It was something that I had read by L. Ron Hubbard. L. Ron Hubbard, he is known mostly now because of the creation of Scientology, but it wasn't Scientology that I was looking at that particular moment in time when I found that. But he talked about it in particular that people normally get lost with words, and they'll skip over a word that they don't understand and continue forward. But he made a particular reference inside of this book that I actually carry with me almost all the time. This is called Speaking from Experience, that you should never pass a word that you don't understand, that you should look it up. And if people pause for a moment and did that, you get further ahead than what you think. Because sometimes, I mean, let's just talk about it. People will come up to you and give you a concept about something, and you'll go, oh, yeah, I understand. And you have no clue what's going on. Imagine if you understood what the person was saying.
Yeah.
That's how that came about. I mean, I would love to say it was an original Jay idea, but it definitely wasn't.
Yeah, when I heard that, I was like, I never heard of him anything other than Scientology.
No, the thing is that he has the Guinness Book of World Records of the most fiction books ever written, over 1,000. And the interesting part is that if you go back and look at some of the fiction books that he has, they refer to a lot of the stuff that's in Scientology. And I mean, listen, I'm not picking on any religion here. I'm just telling you information that I was able to find, because I like to look at a lot of different things.
Wow. Well, no, that's pretty cool that you're, at least giving us some thoughts on the man that is outside of what we know him for. So now it gets us kind of curious to see, let's see what is his life prior to.
Well, and believe me, I'm not trying to say go look him up. I mean, if you want to see some stuff and just kind of get a, we'll talk about the short term version of it. You could probably look at, there was a documentary on HBO many, many years ago called Going Clear. That would probably be a good documentary to take a look at. It kind of gives you both sides of the equation to take a look at. It's not very pro Scientology, but it's not against Scientology either. I mean, it's kind of a happy medium, if I would probably put it that way.
How about one more? Let me entertain another question if we can. I know that we can't make these, you know, 4-hour interviews. I know you're, oh man, I had it like written down here that I wanted to ask you a question in particular, and I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget, because I myself was like, oh, binaural beats. Mm-hmm. Because I love binaural beats. I mean, once I got turned on to that, I was listening for everything, you know, for anxiety, for depression, for focus, for anything. Every chance I get, I'm listening to something with binaural beats. Are you still embracing binaural beats? And I guess if you can explain that to everybody as you did in the book.
Well, what it consists of is I found out about binaural beats through Thomas Campbell's My Big Toe. That's really where it came about. And what it does, it's actually can do two different kind of sounds that makes you create a third sound inside of your brain waves is really what it ends up being. It changes and it shifts your mind depending on, you know, the tonality and what you're trying to do. And there's a certain hertz level that can actually look at. If you really get bored, you can look at music. There were certain music, they wouldn't let you do a certain hertz until like certain years down the road. I don't know why it worked out that way, but it did. But these can really, we won't call it mind control, but it can make you focus or shift your mentality depending on how you're taking a look at it. And what I have been able to recognize based on the My Big Toe, which stands my big theory of everything, that the concept that if you use them, they can change your, not so much your mental models, but how you feel, how the tonality can change, where some people can do it with lights. This is a particular reference with doing it with sound. Now, I'm an auditory learner. I love to learn by audio in regards to that. So that works for me. Some people like lights. Some people can touch things and be kind of in a different state in regard to that. Now, there's binary toes and their beta waves, or there's some other terminology they can use. The beta waves are the ones that kind of shift the way that your brain works, where binary tones, you'll kind of see it more along in like music, where I remember Michael Jackson saying many, 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 many years ago that essentially music is a mantra. That we're trying to kind of tell you the mantra of what you're supposed to be doing. And if you listen to music, and that's kind of how it goes, it's that repetitive nature of this is what you should feel. So if you look at a binary tone and you wanted an example of it, music is a mantra repeating the chorus. You don't know why you remember the chorus. That's the reason why.
Yes, and that's when you get the hook, and the hook brings you back, you know. Yeah,
and then you're stuck in there for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah, that's my my music side right there. Ta-da. Well, my friend, thank you so much and being so gracious with your time. Honestly, if you are out there, you know, you got to get Dr. J's book, and your the trilogy, is it just going to be the Safety and My Opinion trilogy, or how are you?
Well, we're gonna call it
marketing.
It's gonna be called the Signal Trilogy, and it's all three books are already there on Audible, but all three books are available already on Amazon, where you can do it as pre-order if you're interested in doing that. So just so you know, and they're going to come out May the 13th And then the third one will come out on June the 13th. So if you just go there, if you're able to find safety, in my opinion, it will give you the link for all three for you.
All right. You got it, my friend. And thank you so much. And everybody, don't forget to you can listen to him on safetyfm.com. You could see him every day if you're on YouTube. He's got his safety your safety rant show.
What it is.
But the rated R safety show. And I loved when I was able to be your guest there. That, man, bring back some memories, isn't it?
Well, you did it when Ari was about to be born, so I remember.
Yeah, that was a great call.
Hey, I need you to can you do me a favor? So, well, Sheldon, always a privilege. Yes. I appreciate that. And remember, safetyimo.com. If they put in the code SC, that will actually give it to them for free.
The views and opinions expressed during this broadcast, podcast, or radio show are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Safety FM and or Radio Big. The content discussed, including examples of analysis, is provided for illustrative purposes only. It should not be applied as the sole solution in real-world scenarios, as it is based on limited and dated open source information. Any assumptions made during this broadcast, podcast, or radio show are not reflective of Safety FM and or Radio Big. No portion of this broadcast, podcast, or radio show may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic, mechanical, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of Safety FM and or Radio Big. For permission requests, please contact Safety FM or Radio Big directly.